Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground.
Good morning and welcome to the Garden Goddess Show on WDRT Radio, 91.9 FM, Viroqua, Wisconsin. This is Donna Smith, and we're going to have a great half hour of garden talk today. We'll get to our regular segments of the show in a little bit, but first we're going to jump right into our interview. My guest today is Adam Varney of Small Family Farm in Lafarge. My husband PJ and I met Adam and his wife Jillian in 2020 when we became worker shares at their CSA. Thanks for coming in today, Adam.
Thanks for having me, Donna.
So tell us a little bit about your background and how you got started.
I got started vegetable farming. It would have been 2007 when I met my wife Jill at my brother's farm. Her dream was to have a CSA farm. So that's where we got started. We had a little tiny CSA on my brother's farm, a little 20-member CSA that first year. And eventually we got our own farm, and just year after year, we grew up to 40 members, 60 members the next, 100 the next. And here we are today. We have a 400-member CSA farm.
That's a lot of people to feed.
That's about 600 to 700 families all together. Wow. So that's where we're at on 13 acres. I also got a little bit of vegetable knowledge when I worked at Organic Valley in the produce department.
Okay.
I worked in the warehouse. I worked in the office. I worked as a coordinator to where I was able to go out and visit the different produce farms and see what was going on. I was introduced to plant pathologists at the University of Wisconsin, the entomologists. So I got to interact with those folks at the UW. Where I learned about pests and diseases, and so I got really good knowledge of growing vegetables from Organic Valley, and I was able to take that knowledge home and implement that on our own farm.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So really, that was it the CSA, or was it the work at Organic Valley that got you interested in doing organic farming?
It was my wife. That had this strong interest in organic farming.
Okay.
And I am there to support her and be her farmer.
Okay.
So that was my goal, and here I am today.
Awesome. So when you're choosing varieties of vegetables to grow, I'm guessing you start with a lot of seed catalogs. How many of those are around your house at this time of year?
So I ordered from several different companies. You know, I can name some of them. Johnny's Seeds is a really popular one.
Mm-hmm.
I also order from Seedway. I also order from High Mowing, and they're exclusively organic seed. A little bit from a company called Osborne. There is a company in St. Paul, Minnesota, Jordan Seeds. I get some seeds from Jordan. I order from a lot of different companies, but mm-hmm. mainly Johnny's and Seedway are where most of my seeds come from. So when I'm choosing varieties, having been a farmer now for 20 years mm-hmm. and experienced lots of different varieties coming through in my farm, deciding which ones I like and which ones I don't. A lot of my varieties, I do try new ones, but a lot of the varieties I'm choosing are ones that I already know to be true and
sure.
that I know well. So a lot of the seeds at this point that I'm choosing are ones that I'm already doing because I've found that variety of cauliflower that grows best on my farm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to keep in mind when you're picking seeds and trying out new varieties, is that one variety might grow completely different on a different farm due to nutrients in the soil, conditions, things mm-hmm. like that.
And how would you evaluate that as a grower?
As a grower, as far as like if a crop is doing well or poorly?
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's just take cauliflower, for example. So I've tried several varieties of cauliflower over the years. And sometimes, you know, they don't, you know, those upper leaves don't wrap the head. So the sun gets to the head and they turn them yellow. So some growers, I think, rubber band the leaves up top. That's a lot of work when you're at my scale. So sure. I really want to find a variety that has a full wrap. So some varieties will wrap the head with their leaves to protect it from the sun during growing.
Okay.
So the varieties of cauliflower that I grow are full wrap varieties where I don't have to go out and rubber band the tops.
And is that something that you would find described in the description of that vegetable, or is that another?
That particular trait you would.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
They will say whether they're full or partial wraps on the head.
Okay.
Other things would be uniformity. You know, when I'm growing for a CSA market, I want all the cauliflowers to be uniform, so everybody's getting, you know, a nice head of cauliflower, and not one person a small one and another person a huge one, or
right,
or something like that. So it's important for me to have consistency,
mm-hmm,
in my varieties, and that they make nice heads that are disease-free. Some varieties are more prone to disease than others, so you got to kind of keep that in mind. So
sure.
I've probably trialed 10 different varieties of cauliflower over my 20 years, and I've kind of found two of them that I really like. And that's what I order.
That's what you stick with.
And then what happens sometimes is those seeds will go, they go discontinued. They don't make that variety anymore. So in that case, I have to start trialing again. So
sure,
I'll buy three new varieties that I like, try them in little, you know, little patches, and see how they do.
Okay.
And start looking for a new variety.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I do it. I stick to the ones that I know are true, that have done really well for me in the past.
And if somebody's brand new,
mm-hmm,
to gardening,
yes,
and they want to try some things, what are some vegetables that you might suggest to that person? Because thinking about it for myself, I'm like, I don't know that I would jump into cauliflower.
Right.
But, or broccoli, or even Brussels sprouts. But, you know, like, what would a new person want to give a try?
You know, generally speaking, potatoes are pretty easy.
I did that last year.
All right. How did it turn out?
They did pretty good. I did them in large containers.
Yeah, it's a popular method. And then adding more soil to them,
yep,
as they grow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. you know, carrots are a little tricky, but they're good for a home garden.
And your,
I think,
carrots are the best.
Oh, thanks. And you know that the sweetness of the carrots all really is conditional, I think.
Yeah.
It seems like in a really wet year, they don't quite have the sweetness, where in a dry year, they do. So much of growing vegetables and farming, in my opinion, is conditional. Like, you won't see a lot of disease in a really dry year because that disease needs certain conditions like wetness and humidity to grow.
Sure.
But in a really wet year, obviously you're going to see more of those types of diseases and things coming out in the plants.
So somebody could pick the same variety of carrots as you, but because of the particular growing conditions in that person's yard, or the weather conditions could make those carrots taste totally different.
I think so. Yep, I do.
Okay.
As far as carrots go, I really like the Nantes varieties. There's different varieties of carrots. There's like the Imperators, I think they call them. They're pointy. The Nantes varieties have blunt ends where they're really like curved on the end.
Okay.
My favorite variety is Yaya from Johnny's. That's a Nantes variety. Our fall variety is a Nantes variety called Bolero. From Johnny's again. And then, you know, we've tried different Nantes varieties, and they're all kind of the same. So I stick to the Nantes because they're nice. They tend to be sweet. They tend to be, you know, that nice 7 to 8 inch length and rounded at the bottom. So they're nice, and they're not all pointy at the end.
Okay. So what are a couple other vegetables that maybe that new gardener might want to give a try to?
Well, it kind of depends on what you like. You know, some folks are going to be like, yeah, I really like melons. and they're going to want to try melons. Or I think one of the bigger mistakes growers make is that, or gardeners make, is they'll put their carrots and their melons right next to each other. So you got to keep in mind things like that when you're home gardening, is that those melons are going to take over your carrots, or sure, the winter squash, or you're going to have to like maybe keep those vining crops in a separate bed away mm-hmm. from your crops that are not vining, so they get the air, so they get airflow and the sunlight that sure. they need.
We yeah. grew carrots once, and we had moved into our house, and the people before us had a little playset for their kids, and they had a sandbox that they left behind, and the neighbors took the structure and left the sandbox, and I wanted a garden, and because that space had no grass, PJ tilled in all of that sand. We had the best carrots ever.
Yeah, they like a sandy soil for sure. That's awesome.
So that was my experience. The rest of the time my garden wasn't very productive, and so I really like going to work at Small Family Farm as a worker share, because then I just get a box of vegetables and I don't have to spend all that time trying to grow them myself.
Yes. It is a challenge. It's a challenge to grow your own food. You really have to keep checking on it. You can't just walk away from it. You got to, it actually needs to be babied and taken care of.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have 13 acres, and every day, every day or two, I've looked at everything at least just to make sure I know what's going on in my fields.
Yeah. And observation is really important. And I've talked about that even in just somebody's perennial garden or their annual garden, that you do need to go out all the time and be checking on those things, because, you know, some insect or disease could pop up and wipe out your crop if you haven't looked at it all week.
Yes.
Then you're done with that. So lots of people like their leafy greens. You know, their lettuces sure. and their kales and things. Any advice for the gardener when choosing some of those varieties?
Lettuces are pretty straightforward. We grow a lot of leaf lettuce, so we start those with transplants in the greenhouse. It's going to be harder to start lettuce by seed in a garden, just because it's going to take a week to germinate. By then, you got weeds along with it. You're going to have to be weeding from the get-go. So that's why we start ours a month ahead of time, so we got a nice little plant to put out. So I think lettuce will do best with transplants. Lettuce is pretty easy. It's one of the easier crops to grow. Just give it a good space around, you know, 12 inches around it from the next plant, mm-hmm. and you should get a nice head of lettuce. Kale is a little more tricky because of the bugs. Again, we plant our kale with transplants, started in the greenhouse in March, and generally go to the field in April. But now you have flea beetles and cabbage worms to deal with. One thing I would recommend for a home gardener would to experiment with row cover. We use a lot of, you know, the polyester woven row cover mm-hmm. on our farm, especially for cucurbits, melons and cucumbers and winter squash and things. They provide a little environment inside that row cover where they're going to grow faster. They're not going to get any wind to get beat up, and it will exclude the bugs.
Sure.
With kale, however, you can't leave that row cover on all year, because kale is a cool season crop. It's going to grow tall. Yeah. You know, it's going to grow too big for the row cover. So then, you know, in organics, we do have to spray for the worms mainly, and the flea beetles can be really, really problematic. The little shiny black bugs, mm-hmm. you see them, the little tiny itty bitty shiny ones that hop around, they can really wreck a plant. I kind of did a little looking around. There is a product that home gardeners can, is called Monterey. The brand is Monterey, and they have a spinosad product and also a BT product. I looked it up before I came here on Amazon for like $20 for a little. So that would be like the equivalent of what I use on a larger scale.
Okay.
For prevention or how do you say, like just to hold them back.
Sure.
Okay. So, you know, I'm using those products To keep the worms off and the flea beetles. And again, that's a monitoring thing. You have to go out to your plants and see your kale plants and go, oh, look at all the little black shiny bugs all over the leaves. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you would use the spinosad spray, not before a rain, because the bugs actually have to eat it before they die. So you have to know how to use the product. But I think a lot of home gardeners don't want to spray.
Right.
They really want to grow a cabbage without spraying. And that's really hard.
That can be really tricky.
Really challenging. So spinosad is the only insecticide that I use on my farm. It's just kind of something that I have to do if I want nice-looking produce.
Right. And being an organic farmer, those are all things that you have to keep track of.
Oh, I have to write it all down. They come in and they'll inspect and make sure all my receipts are in order and everything like that. And those products are OMRI-approved for organics. That's the Organic Material Review Institute.
Yeah.
So any products that we use on our farm have to be OMRI-certified.
Are vegetable seeds organic, and do you have to use organic seed when you're growing an organic farm?
That's a good question. So in organics, we have to do a seed search. So let's say there's a variety I want to grow. I really want to grow Lieutenant Broccoli, which is my favorite spring broccoli to grow after many, many trials. So what I'll do is you have to look for it in organic. First, you have to look through your catalogs and see if anybody's got it in organic. You have to look in at least three spots and then mark that down that you looked in those three spots. And if you can't find the variety that you want organic, then you can order untreated, which means that it might not be an organic seed, but it has no treatments coatings on it.
Okay.
Because some, you know, in conventional, I guess they treat them for like mice and things like that. I don't even know the chemicals they use. But we're allowed to order untreated. So a lot of the varieties that I grow, they don't even make them organic.
Okay.
But like I said before, High Mowing offers all organic seed. But what I've run into in the past is I'll try some varieties of organic seed, and they just don't do well on my farm. So, again, as a farmer, you really want to grow the varieties that are going to keep me in business.
Sure.
So I do grow probably about a quarter of my seeds are organic seeds, and the other three quarters are untreated.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
And that information, again, is going to be in somebody's seed catalog that they're looking
at. Absolutely. They'll tell you if it's available in organic. Yep, especially Johnny's. They'll offer organic and untreated.
Okay. Awesome. So at this time of year, so we're recording this about mid-February, and it's going to air at the end of February. Mm-hmm. What kinds of tasks are you doing now, and what are you going to be looking to do in March?
Yeah. So what we're doing right now is fixing all of our equipment, bringing in wood. We have a wood-fired boiler in our greenhouse. We'll start that up on March 1st. So we just brought in a bunch of wood, hauling in all my soil mix that I ordered right now. I'm currently ordering Purple Cow Organics soil mix, so we have to go pick that up in DeForest, Wisconsin, in a couple loads. So we've been bringing home the soil mix.
And you're using all that soil mix to start your seeds.
That's what we start our seeds in the greenhouse. Yep.
Okay.
To kind of give you an idea what we get going in the greenhouse in March.
Yeah.
Mainly March 1st, we're going at onions and leeks. That's the very first thing we'll start planting.
Okay.
Other things that we'll get going early is celery and celeriac root. Really early in March, get those going. And then a little later in March, mid-March to the end of March, we start going on kale in our first round of broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage and kohlrabi, all the first rounds of brassicas. We'll start going on lettuce and Swiss chard. And that's towards the end of March. The beginning of the March, we focus more on, you know, getting the onions going, starting a little bit of lettuce, maybe for the family or something, just so we can have some early spring lettuce. Those are the main ones that we go at in March. So all of those crops are transplanted to the field. Generally speaking, the snow isn't really melted out until April, usually. And once it's dry in the field, I'll go at the first seedings of beets and carrots and spinach and parsnips and all those things I direct seed early in the spring.
Okay. Is there any other thoughts you had to share with the kind of the beginning gardener who really wants to try doing that this year? And what are a couple things that you would like that person to keep in mind?
Sure. You know, again, we're 13 acres, so we have our way of preparing soil, and our soil's already tilled. You know, we've already worked the soil for many years, and I have my machinery that I do that with, but if I was in my backyard, it would be a different story. So as for a home gardener, I don't know all the different methods, but I know of some, like raised beds, people, you know, with wood, you know, with 2x8s or whatever, making a square, digging it up, removing the sod, and then filling it back in with soil or compost or something like that. You know, that's a method. I know there's the lasagna garden method where there's mulch on top of, you know, you're going to need carbon and nitrogen in there. So I'm not very familiar with the lasagna method, but that's like a no-till method where you're constantly adding.
Right.
There's also like the solarization method. So we did that a little on our farm where we would like, where we put our blueberries, we laid down ground fabric or landscaping fabric about a few months ahead of time to kill the quack grass.
Okay.
And after about 3 or 4 months, we pulled that back and it was bare. So that was one way that we eliminated this, the grass before we planted.
Mm-hmm. Without using any chemicals.
Without using any chemicals, just, you know, no sun for a while. In that kind of a system, you might want to think about that grass will come back in from the sides of the bed.
Sure.
It's going to start, as soon as you remove that plastic and till it up, it's going to start wanting to creep back in. So I think that's where a raised bed system would work really well, where you have that wood barrier around the bed. Mm-hmm. It raises it up a little easier to work in it because it's up a little bit.
Sure.
And then you got that good tilth. Mm-hmm. amount. And I think that's really important, and I think that's where a lot of home gardeners fall short, is that they don't really have a great way to till the ground, whether it's like a walk-behind tiller or a broad fork or something like that. I think that tillage is important up to about 10 to 12 inches. If you're in, well, the way I test it is I stick like a harvest knife into the ground.
Sure.
Until it won't go in anymore. And my harvest knife goes pretty much all the way in.
Okay.
The roots need to be able to have access to loose soil so they can work around the soil pieces. Think about if your bed is only 4 inches deep and it's hard underneath there, and then you get 4 inches of rain. The root zone of that plant will be saturated because it couldn't drain very far.
Sure.
So the drainage is really important for when big rains come. And that's just fundamentals of your vegetables need to be able to move around. The roots need to be able to move around in the soil.
Right.
At least 7 to 12 inches.
And you want that because this is a short-term crop, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's only going to be growing for so long. It's an annual, basically. So it needs to have good soil.
Yes. You know, I test my soil every few years for nutrients, like the nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus, and all the micronutrients, to make sure they're balanced.
Sure.
I'm not an agronomist, but I kind of know how to read a soil test and what to do. So I think that's important to make sure that you have good tilth. And then the next thing would be fertility, to make sure it's fertile. And then the next step is just to make sure the plants stay healthy and that they're not getting attacked by bugs or disease or anything like that. I know you got a lot of people out there probably wanting to grow tomatoes, and I just wanted to maybe mention tomatoes. You know, there's lots of different great tomato varieties to grow, but if your tomatoes are diseased, you're not going to get a great haul. So I think it's really important for folks to understand that the biggest tomato disease that I see in home gardens and my own is a disease called Septoria leaf spot. It's a fungal disease that starts from the bottom of the plants. You'll see it right at the bottom, and then all of a sudden, in just a week or two, it just fires right up the plant, and
right.
Your plant is dead in just a couple of weeks. That's Septoria, and that's caused from soil splashing on the leaves. So whatever you can do for tomatoes to keep soil from splashing on your leaves from the time they're planted, whether that's ground fabric or mulch or plastic or whatever you got to do to keep the soil off the plants, just that will help with disease. And then there's other things to do for disease as well.
Sure.
But if you're talking just cultural control, keep the soil off the leaves.
Okay. Well, that has been a great discussion, Adam. We've run out of time, so we need to wrap up. I want to thank you again for joining us. My guest again has been Adam Varney from Small Family Farm in Lafarge. Maybe we can have you back again and we'll talk some more because you are a wealth of knowledge. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Donna.
Well, that was a great interview with Adam from Small Family Farm. And we talked for so long that we have just enough time for a few reminders. If you have a question about something going on in your garden or want some help or advice, you can email me. If you're curious about a garden-related topic that you'd like me to cover in a future show, let me know that too. Send an email with questions or suggestions to gardening@wdrt.org, and I will respond on a future show. Tasks in the Garden Journal to be focusing on over the next few weeks include getting out to do your dormant pruning. We've had some mild temperatures and reduced snow cover, so conditions are great to get outside. Don't forget to take a look at your fruit trees this time of year and get those pruned to better shape the plants and promote stronger yields from your trees. We're very likely to have more cold and snow, so don't jump into garden cleanup just yet. Remember, the debris left behind is there to protect and insulate many of your garden plants and for the benefit of many overwintering insects who are not quite ready yet to abandon those locations. Area garden centers are well stocked with seed packets of flowers and vegetable seeds. If you haven't already ordered seeds from the catalogs, then it's time to get out to your local garden center and do a little shopping and dreaming of the warm weather ahead of us. Expand your palette this season and try something new in your garden, as Adam suggested. You might find a new variety or a completely new veggie that's not only worth growing, but eating as well. 2 weeks ago, I went to the PBS Wisconsin's Garden and Green Living Expo in Madison. I had a great time being around so many garden enthusiasts. The seminar topics covered just about anything that you could think of. I went to seminars on beekeeping, growing and harvesting herbs, native plants and their diseases, soil science, mulching, and gardening for hummingbirds. The expo has over 150 seminars each year, so if you want to plan a trip to Madison next February, it's well worth a weekend away. I volunteered my time on Friday and got to hear some excellent speakers. A bonus for going to the Garden Expo was meeting other professionals who would love to share their gardening expertise with you. I have plenty of guests for upcoming shows, so stay tuned. Well, that's a wrap for today. I'll leave you with this garden quote by Ann Bradstreet. If we had no winter, the spring would not be so pleasant. Thanks so much for joining me today. Until next time, have a wonderful day. Let's go out and make our world a little more beautiful, one plant at a time.